Welcome back to Stellar Performance Solutions. This is Chris, the Becomers Chris. I'm with Josh Hadley today. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. It's good to be here.
You're a well-traveled man. You've been to Iceland. Well, that was actually a while ago now. You've probably been in about six other places since Iceland, but your name came up during your time in Iceland because of the particulars of the talk you gave there at the Billion Dollar Seller Summit. So I thought I'd start with that before we get into all the mushy stuff around tariffs and brand challenges that everyone's facing right now. But what was the title or the gist of your talk, and why do you think it resonated with people?
Yeah, so I won the Best Speaker Award there at the Billion Dollar Seller Summit. And the reason why I felt like it resonated well with people is I think people are hungry and desperate for the opportunity to move some sales off of Amazon. They just don't know how to do it. And so what I kind of laid out was like, hey, here are the simple strategies that we've done in a very basic fashion, because it's just myself doing it. I'm no expert, but how we were able to shift from Amazon being 98% of our entire sales, and it always has been from 2017 up until last year, to where today Amazon is only 70% of our sales. So we were able to add two 30%. New sales channels within the last 9 months. And I basically walked everybody through what we've done and how they could follow a similar playbook to do that.
That's good, because a lot of people ask you and ask me and other people, how do we diversify when Amazon's our best channel by far?
Yep.
And that's a good question. One you have apparently already answered. So it's working pretty well the last 9 months.
Yeah, it's worked well for us. And I think that here's kind of the premise and the foundation that I'm leaning into this with, Chris, is that Amazon is only going to get harder and harder. We've seen that, right? We all relish in the days and we say, oh, I wish I could take the knowledge I have now and go dominate Amazon again back in 2016, 2017, right? Like it would be 10 times easier. However, that's not the reality that we're living in. So what is the reality that we're living in? Here's what I see the reality that we're living in is, okay? Amazon fees are only going to increase year over year. Get used to it. Amazon's never going to pull those things back. FBA placement fees, they're not going away. The supply chain complexity, needing to have AWD as a new step into this process, not having enough inventory capacity. Welcome to the new world.
Yeah.
That is the new world of selling on Amazon. So here's my prediction, Chris. Over the next 5 years, I think the people that are winning on Amazon are winning because they have been able to generate demand for their products off of Amazon. Most of the Amazon sellers today have basically been mooching off of Amazon and their traffic up until this point. And that's the only thing they're good at. They are really good at saying, Amazon's got X number of people searching for this type of keyword every single month. How do I, quote unquote, steal some of that traffic for myself? And so that sell or that traffic goes to me, that's how I make my money. But I think that here's the reality. There's only going to be more overseas competition that comes in.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's only going to increase. We already see Chinese making up 60% of sellers now. Guess what? In the next 5 years, let's see that number get closer to 80%. I don't think that's a far, far reality check for most people. So if that's where things are going, how do you stay relevant? I believe the brands that are still relevant from 5 years from now are the people that aren't mooching off of Amazon's traffic, but instead they're generating demand for their products off of Amazon. And Amazon just happens to be a place where people have trust. They like the quick turnaround time, the quick delivery times that they can get their products. But Amazon's not the end all be all for the businesses that are succeeding on Amazon 5 years from now.
Yeah, I think sellers got a little bit complacent. Like I think of product review, solicitation. People became hooked on these practices that disappeared overnight for a variety of reasons that we don't need to go into now, but you couldn't just easy lay up positive reviews or expect on, you know, getting those. So all these workarounds, and like people weren't thinking in terms of investing in TikTok influencers. Instead, they were trying to put inserts in packages, stuff like that. And it's like the bill comes due eventually. If you're using these old tactics that are kind of fading out slowly and you get used to using bad habits, then you kind of just stay in that rut, I think. And you don't stay as agile or nimble in terms of how you respond to current trends or current challenges. So, which is kind of a different way of spinning what you just said in terms of, I mean, Amazon being hooked on your sales rank, trying to get a certain number of reviews, trying to outspend your competition on ad. And then, like you said, all the fees, they keep saying we're not raising fees in 2025. They raised other cost centers or created other policy changes and problems that resulted in expenses, right? But they didn't officially raise fees per se. But next year, 2026, which is only 6-7 months away, they haven't said anything about not raising fees next year.
Yeah, you best believe it. So, they'll be raising their fees again next year. And Chris, it really comes back to, in my opinion, that look, if you're just trying to like steal Amazon's traffic and you just have another Me Too product, like, man, like you don't have a very bright future. But who does? So for the listeners, let's open the curtain and say, hey, who does have a bright future on Amazon? And this is just tried and true marketing 101, brand 101. People always said, hey, make sure you build a real brand on Amazon. And then people would get caught up with, oh, well, it's the way my main images look and it's the product packaging.
Optimization.
That's not the brand. Yes, okay, the product experience and the brand packaging and your A-plus image and content. Okay, yes, it adds to the overall brand story. But guess what I think brand actually means to people? Brand means this. Can you get people excited about your product somewhere else off of Amazon? You want people talking about your product. Your product is so good that when people get it, they want to go share it with other people. Your product is so good that creators rave about it. Your product is so good that other people, creators, influencers, they're making money off of your product, right? And so you have to question yourself. Look, if I'm selling another Tumblr here, what's my unique differentiation? Because if you're having a challenge having creators or influencers be excited to talk about your product, I think you're fighting a massive uphill battle.
Oh, yeah.
Over the next 5 years on Amazon.
I think, and then you add tariffs to this, which we don't have to spend the rest of this podcast on tariffs, but tariffs favor the strong versus the weak or the large versus the small brands, simply because the larger brands that have the resources to absorb the hit or survive the storm, they have more resources to hang around longer. And then if some of their smaller competitors drop off, the larger brands are going to share, dividing up that market share or eat all that market share themselves, which means maybe we're trending towards a future marketplace where it's just a bunch of larger brands and prices will be what those brands say they want to charge for those items. So there is some favoritism built into that. And I don't think Amazon minds, or maybe it doesn't matter to them, if some of these smaller brands don't survive this whole process. I mean, they can always blame tariffs too. Now they've got a convenient excuse, so Amazon doesn't have to absorb the whole blame. But if you're growing now and you understand how to capitalize on some of these market circumstances or outdo your competition because you're making better strategic decisions, let me know what you think of this. I mean, don't you think you're just going to eat market share up down the road because some of your competition is going to fall behind?
Yeah, 100%. I think the message I would give to anybody is you have got to start working on generating demand for your products off of Amazon today.
Like and TikTok.
It could be TikTok. It could be on Instagram. It could be on Facebook. TikTok's one, right? And so you also have to ask yourself the question, like, is my product TikTokable, right? Which means you have to have a product that when people see it, they're going to stop the scroll. So do you have like, look, if I just have an ordinary black tumbler that's not really different than somebody else's black tumbler, that ain't going to stop the scroll. So what is it about your product that can be viral worthy? And if you don't have a product that you feel like, wow, like this could actually stop the scroll, I would be second guessing, is this a product or a brand that I really want to be doubling down on?
Yeah.
But like, let's take, for example, like, so Chris, I don't think it's necessarily like this can only do well on TikTok. Let's talk about automotive parts, right? Let's say you're selling automotive parts and it's like, I don't know, certain screws that allow you to connect a souped up muffler or something to your truck or something like that, right? Okay, let's say you're doing that. It's probably not going viral on TikTok because that doesn't have a broad enough appeal. Like if I see something like that, I'm scrolling past it. Like it's just not me. However, there's a bunch of truck enthusiasts that are out there that are trying to soup up X, Y, or Z. Well, guess where they're going? You got to find where they're congregating. Maybe it's on TikTok, but most likely it's probably on YouTube. And it's also probably on Reddit forums. And so what you need to do is you need to get it in front of those people, right? Maybe it's Facebook groups. And so my focus is this. How do I take my brand and say, where do I go find my audience and just bring awareness about my brand to that audience, period. Yeah. And so reaching out, it's DMing a bunch of people. And I'll give Amazon some credit here. Like Amazon's done a great job with Amazon Creator Connections. Mm-hmm. If brands are not utilizing that, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You've got to use that. And don't just see it as a one-time like, hey, will you talk about my product? Like, see it as
an ongoing relationship.
This
is good. I mean, so as you know, we're doing our Seller Velocity Conference in France coming up in a few weeks, June 4th in Lyon, France. What I'm trying to get people, like, just take a step back, think about strategy. What can you do so that you're in a stronger position when some lightning strike happens, whether it's an account suspension, hopefully not, or like your ASIN gets taken down, or tariffs, or your ad costs go through the roof overnight for some reason, whatever it might be, how are you hedging your bets and staying strong kind of in terms of product awareness across the board, which is what you're saying, really, so that you're not so fragile on Amazon? Because what's the number one thing I hear of in our world? Well, we were doing great on Amazon until they randomly shut us down for a month. And their revenue was all Amazon, so it put a huge dent in their earnings. And it's like way back when every brand was trying to grow a certain percentage every year because they were looking at exiting, right? People don't talk about it as much now. But with your strategy and what you're talking about, it makes you're hedging your bets, but still growing and maintaining the growth. And then you're also making it so that if something bad happens, you're protected in a sense. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. And I think honestly, Chris, it's just like seeing myself as an omni-channel brand. And I look at all the other brands that have succeeded and have done really well. Like we want to get to nine figures. So what does a nine-figure brand do? Right. And I think that's the decision most people need to make. Look, if you're in this just to make a quick buck and Amazon's your cup of tea and you're like, Josh, like, I don't want to create relationships with influencers. Like that's hard. Like that's not easy. And like I say good. Like good, because it's not easy. It genuinely is not easy. But I say good when it's hard because most people won't do it. And most people don't want to, like, they could say, yes, I want to have a nine-figure brand. But it's like, do you really? Because that means you got to get good at not just Amazon, but you got to get good at social commerce. You got to get good at D2C on Shopify. You've got to get good at retail distribution, licensing. Like, those are all the things that nine-figure brands are able to do. And if you're not willing to pay the tuition that it costs to be able to add those as resources and skill sets to your team, then you'll never get there. And I just find way too often, Chris, in the Amazon seller community, people with limited mindsets of, I thought this was meant to be like me just bankrolling a bunch of money real quick. And then I can just sit at the beach and hang out. And Amazon is far from passive income, I think all of us have come to realize.
Yeah. I mean, there seems to be finally some collective agreement around like 2016 to 2019 was the passive income window, where I still wouldn't have called it passive income, but it would have been like a little bit more of an easy layup approach. Now it feels like just nose to the grindstone all the time. And I liked how you said DMs to influencers and cultivating those relationships, but doing it smartly, not just like a bunch of ChatGPT messages that those influencers are drowning in anyway.
Yeah.
That they're not going to read, that they're not going to care about, because they're just going to toss you on the pile. You know, put some time, care, and attention into it.
Yeah.
And I just thought of that because I see people doing it. This sounds crazy, but I see people doing ChatGPT type emails to like Amazonians when they're appealing for things, and they don't think before they do it in terms of this is going to turn off the person, that they're not getting something that, first of all, it doesn't sound like it's meant for them.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's meant for the world. And it's like, okay, this is an escalation email, and I won't go too far down the rabbit hole of what they were escalating or why. Bottom line is they're trying to get a listing reinstated, and they were using like AI or ChatGPT to do it. It's kind of the same off-putting thing that you might think, or that I might think, if we get emails from people that are obviously rewritten by ChatGPT. It's like, why would I spend time on this? So same approach with influencers. I mean, if you're trying to attract somebody and initiate a relationship, maybe don't blanket them all with the same exact message.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. So Chris, here's one of the things, here's a really unique tool that we've actually been able to implement that I had the same methodology that you had. We had somebody that was originally reaching out and messaging people on TikTok full time to get our products into their hands and just raise awareness about the brand. Say, hey, are you interested in talking about any of these products? We were able to replace that full-time person with a software tool. It's called Yuka. And it's basically an AI tool, but it's tied in with TikTok. And they have bots, and TikTok's okay with bots. And it will read that influencer or that creator's content and everything they've talked about. And for every influencer, it will craft a unique message for them. And our open rates and response rates have been over 12%. Like, that's extremely high for a cold DM to people, but it's because like it takes the time to analyze their content, and it actually does an even better job than what my full-time human person was able to do with their limited time and resources, reaching out to thousands of creators. And Chris, I think this is another like really important like myth to dispel for most people, because TikTok isn't new and people have talked about the success they're having on TikTok Shop previously.
Yep.
However, most people say like, I tried it, then it didn't work for me. And I ask them, I was like, well, what did you do and how did you go about it? Right. And they're like, well, I sent out some samples to creators, and the videos they created were garbage. And then just like, I generate like two sales. Mm-hmm. And I then will follow up and I ask them like, well, how many samples are we talking about? Some people as low as like 10, some 50, maybe on the high end. And they're pretty proud of this when they say like, oh, like it was 100 people.
Dozen. Yeah.
Well, even 100, like that's on the high end. And they're very proud that they gave away 100 samples to these creators. And I say, okay, that's cute, but try 1,000, because that's what we're doing on a monthly basis. And so if you're not doing that volume, like, then don't be surprised that it's not working. And the best analogy is this, like, look, when Mr. Beast releases a video, guess how many different types of creative and thumbnails he is testing in intros. He's not just testing like, oh, here's 3 A/B tests for my thumbnail. He's doing hundreds of thumbnails to test, because he knows on YouTube, the number one thing is like people only click on it if it looks appealing, right? And the gist of it is this, like the scale at what people post on content. Most people, even creators, will think like, oh, I'm proud of myself if I post a couple times a day on social media. And it's like, yeah, but the people that have built millions of followings are posting 10, 20 times a day, right? And so like, it's the scale and the volume thing that I think people get caught up in. They want this, they want to reel in this big whale after only having cast the line out one time. And they're like, oh, surely I'm going to catch the big whale in my first cast. And it's like, no.
Yeah. Well, I wish you could join us in France in a few weeks, but you've been traveling so much, you probably need to go home to Texas to rest.
My family, the four kids would not be happy if I were to leave again, but
pile them all in a private jet to Europe. Yeah.
One day.
Where can people reach you if they want to discuss growing their presence off Amazon?
Yeah. So if people, I share these type of strategies on my own podcast, Ecom Breakthrough, Ecom with two M's. We've had Chris on a couple times. He's dropped some knowledge bombs on us there. But every week, I try to share at least three actionable strategies that you can implement in your own business to be able to scale from 7 to 8 figures and beyond, even to 9 figures. And so I'm just sharing that journey and actionable things that people can do. So if you want to reach out to me, you can reach out to josh@ecombreakthrough.com. Happy to hear from your audience, Chris. And I know the people that are attending your event there in France, they're going to love it. They're going to come away with an immense amount of value. You put together a lot of wicked smart strategies yourself.
Exactly. Wicked smart, said like a true Bostonian. Hey, good local flavor out here. Yeah. This year, Seller Velocity, we have French food and French wine. So didn't have that last time, but looking forward to it quite a bit. And early June in France is pretty nice. So I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next time.